For today, our topic is what's called second rondo, standard rondo form. In other words, this is the rondo form. When you think rondo, this is what you're thinking of. If you, I don't know if you do think rondo or not, but But if so, if you do or don't, it doesn't really matter. But this is the normal kind of rondo that most people associate with the idea of a rondo. Let's think for a moment what we know of the first rondo that we talked about. Now, first rondo, which as you remember, was ABA, right? You went from an initial completely rounded off section, an A section, and then you went on to a B section and then went back to the A section. As I told you, the idea of rondo is that returning, that idea of returning. The A section is always in the tonic. That's a big thing to remember, by the way, because it distinguishes it from some other similar forms. The A section is in the tonic. Now, first rondo occurs when it's A, then to B, then to A. Second rondo occurs when there are more excursions. The number of excursions is not set in stone. Most commonly, though, there are two excursions. So in other words, the form is usually A, B, A, C, A, and then a return to A. That's the most common. But a rondo can be almost anything. It could be A, B, C, A, D, A, E, F, G, A, whatever. Anything. As long as it keeps coming back to A, and as long as A is in the tonic, and as long as, it's very important, as long as there's that organic unity between the sections, as long as all of those conditions are met, it's a rondo. Now, one thing to distinguish from very carefully is the difference between rondo and compound song form. Remember last week I talked to you a little bit about the difference between first rondo and compound song form. Anyone remember what I said about that? How to tell the difference between a first rondo and a compound song form? Any memories? Any thoughts?
There's like a break between the two, right?
In the compound. That's right, bravo, yes. In other words, in a compound song form, the parts themselves are really self-contained entities, very much so. They could stand on their own as separate pieces. In a rondo, it's a seamless whole. A couple of other things in a rondo, there will typically be transitions between the sections. There will not be in a compound song form, right, at all. Also, another little tip is that in a compound song form, the second part of the compound will almost always be called a trio. And it will actually say that in the notation, you know, which is really cheating, but hey, it's there. You know, so those are differences. Now, the same differences hold. There's something we didn't really talk about very much last semester, but it's worth mentioning, is that there are compound song forms with multiple trios. Okay, two trios typically. You'll find that Brahms uses them a lot. There's quite a few of those. Schumann, if you ever know the Schumann, for example, the, what's it called? Toccata. No, not the toccata, the other one. Somebody help me here. The Schumann, I'm having a 52-year-old moment here. The arabesque, there we go. This guy. This is, it's a compound song form with two trios. The first trio is. And then the second trio is. It's a good example of a compound song form with two trios. It's somewhat different from a full rondo, because in a full rondo, again, there's not this huge change between sections, and they tend to be a seamless whole. And if you're still in the dark about it, which you may be when you're analyzing something, look for the word trio. If you see trio in there, if you see trio, then you've got a compound song form. All righty? But a rondo, which is this seamless whole. So second rondo can be anything that has more than one excursion. The only thing it doesn't do, and this is what distinguishes it from third rondo, which we'll be covering later in the semester, is that it does not have sonata form aspects to it. If it has sonata-form aspects, then it becomes third rondo or sonata rondo, as it's called. That's the number of rondos we distinguish nowadays. In the old days, Marx had five different rondo forms, and so on, which most people would not agree with now, because he was including things that we would consider compound song forms now. Okay? So let's take a look at the overall structure of a rondo, and let's just go over this in some detail. I think I will flick the light off here so you can see it better. This particular color scheme looks wonderful when Steve Jobs is doing a presentation at Apple, because this is his favorite for that. But it's a little, you need a darkened room for it. So let's go over the basic structure, shall we? So starting out, the A section, any song form in the home key. Now, one thing that we should not leave dangling here is that the tempo of a rondo does not have to be slow. First rondos, as remember, are typically slow because they're so often slow movements, nocturnes by Chopin and so on. Rondos tend to be fast. They have a tendency to be last movements of things. So generally speaking, this will be, again, probably an up-tempo as a rule, as an up-tempo. Any song form, and it'll be in the home key. Now, that said, any song form, the odds are it's going to be a three-part song form. The odds are. That's much more common. The Viennese classical composers, in particular, preferred three-part song form for their rondos and two-part song form for their variations. That's just, it's an overall tendency that you can see among these composers. So three-part is more likely, but it doesn't have to be. Following A, there is almost certain to be some kind of a transition if the rondo is at all large. It doesn't have to be. A can come to a full close and go directly to B. There's no reason why it can't do that. But a transition would be quite normal. So B, in the magenta here, B is the first excursion. That's the term you'll hear a lot, the first excursion. It's, as a rule, in a near-related key. Remember what near-related means. A key that's no more than one jot away on the cycle of fifths from the original. Right. Often, it's in a one-part song form. And remember, when I say one-part song form, it could be anything from an expanded phrase to a period to expanded periods and to phrase group. Phrase group is very common for this sort of thing. In other words, formally speaking, it tends to be a little bit looser. And that's really important because, again, the classical and classically minded composers would use song forms, strong song forms, like three-part song form, for their main body of material. And they would use much looser forms for the subsidiary bodies. That really helps the listener a lot. You can tell what's what just by what has the most rounded off forms. It would be very rare to find, for example, a double period for B, unless the rondo itself is just made up out of bricks, one set form after another. Which there's one particular kind of rondo which we'll be looking at which does exactly that. It may typically have a codetta. Now, the difference between a codetta and a transition. A transition is moving towards something. Transitions typically modulate. They have to. If we're going to move from a home key to a secondary key, we're going to have to modulate unless we want to make it abrupt. The codetta, remember, is a finishing off. It tends to finish things off rather than move forward. So codetta will have some kind of a finishing feel, some kind of cadential feel, and it then will be followed by a transition. Keep in mind that neither the codetta nor the transition are required. They're both optional. But we have to have some kind of transition, probably, because we're going to go back to the home key. Now, it depends on what key we were in, right? Say if we're in a major key, and if we just move to the key of the dominant for B, then getting back to A in the home key, there's nothing to it, because, you know, you just go. But if we've gone to a less easily related key, let's say if we were in C major for this, we went to E minor for that, we're going to need to do a little bit of modulating back. You know, a sudden modulation from E minor to C major is going to sound kind of weird. So it'll depend on what key. Minor keys will be more likely to have transitions than major keys because they will tend to modulate further afield. Minor tends to do that. But we get a repeat to A. Now, A can either be a full restatement of our original, that's very common, or it may be varied, it may be shortened. But it will be in the home key. That's really important, because other recurring forms, cyclic forms, don't necessarily require the home key. Now, this is where things get very interesting. My map here says that at the end of A, there will be a transition. There very well might be. But it's just as often for C, the second excursion, to interrupt, to come in like gangbusters out of nowhere. And typically, in fact, it's not that unusual, especially with Haydn, who tends to be more sometimes abrupt in his structures. With Haydn, as a matter of fact, C will actually interrupt A. A will be like a phrase short or something like that, and it'll actually come barreling in. Or we will get to our right to our cadence of A in the home key, and there'll be an evaded cadence suddenly, whack, that takes us into this new key. It'll be this sudden thing. Typically Haydn, not so much other composers, but Haydn typically will also go to a parallel key here. Haydn likes to go, if he's in major, he likes to go to the minor there. And he will not, and typically again, this is a Haydn thing, he will not only go to the minor, but he will go to the minor as a climax. It will be like this sudden fortissimo. And he loves to do that. It's such a Haydn practice, in fact, that composers active in the 1780s and 1790s used to copy him in doing that. They're what Landon calls the seguaci, the followers of Haydn. And there were a whole bunch of them that wrote that used Haydn's mannerisms, almost down to the last jot and tittle, but they weren't Haydn. And so they're writing all this fake Haydn, and quite a bit of it got published as being by Haydn, because Haydn's name was very bestseller, and as a result, that has caused scholars and musicologists no end of grief trying to figure out authentic Haydn from the clones. It's pretty well sorted out now, but until not too long ago, there was a set of string quartets that were everybody assumed to be Haydn's that it turns out weren't. Opus 3, they're sometimes called now, and they're not by Haydn. You'll find them in old editions, but they're not. There were a number of symphonies that also were by his students and so on, and part of it is because once you know his tricks, you could copy him, and so you had all of his mannerisms without all of his strength. It's like watching a Betty Davis impersonation or something like that. You know, it's all the mannerisms without any of anything else. So anyway, he loved to do this sudden whack into the minor. And if you go over some Haydn symphonies, you know, when you get to Rondo movements, last movements, you'll be amazed how often he does that. It will tend to be in a song form of any sort. It could be very, very broad, one part, two part, three part. It will tend to be a little developmental. It will act in a sort of developmental sort of way. In fact, in third Rondo, it becomes a formal development. So this will tend to be the most obviously transitional and the most obviously sort of non-main material part. It also has a tendency to be the most interesting part, because it has a tendency to do all the most interesting phrase structures and so on, and it tends to get the wildest. It will almost certainly have a transition. And its transition will almost certainly act like a retransition back to the home key. In other words, it will really start bringing us back home. It'll be a big deal. And then A will again be either very much like the second A, or it might be very much like the first one. Most likely it will be a very satisfying statement of our main body there, a very, very satisfying one as a rule. It may even be done twice. It may even be repeated if it's short. It's a rare rondo that will not end in a coda. The sectional quality of the rondo really demands some kind of summation. So codas are quite common. I mean, little tiny ones and so on won't have them necessarily, but really codas are very, very common. So A, B, A, C, A, transitions in between, codetta at the end of B is typical, coda at the end. Now remember, this is just one template. Any number of variants on this are possible. A very common variant is to omit this, is to omit the A in the middle. Very, very common. So in other words, you wind up with A, B, C, A as a result. Very, very common. Another very, very common variant is right here, A, to insert B again and then A again. So in other words, this part of it, ABA, is repeated at the end. That happens quite a bit. Taka? It ends with A or the coda, yeah. It won't end with anything else. The idea of rondo, remember, it's like round, to round off. If it doesn't round off with that, it probably isn't even rondo. It's pretty rare. So there are occasional pieces in very loose rondo form that may not. One I can think of is an interesting piece is the finale of Gershwin's Piano Concerto, George Gershwin's Concerto in F, which is one of the wildest rondos ever written because it's really more like a Broadway overture. The form, if you were to diagram, would be like ABA, CDEFGA, HIJA, you know, like that. It just goes all over the place. It shouldn't work. It shouldn't work. And the reason it works is because all of the excursions are themes from the previous two movements. So he keeps bringing back his themes earlier. And when it ends, it doesn't end in the A material. It ends in the primary theme from the first movement. So it works. It's calling it a rondo is even maybe a little weird, but it's the only form that seems to match it in any way. It's actually very well put together. He gets criticized for being structurally, not so good, but in fact it's a bum rap. He actually did just fine. You just have to take him on his own terms. I mean, he's fine. But the fact is that that's an interesting example, is that one does not end with A. And A, in fact, in the Gershwin concerto wouldn't make a very good ending. So yum pa da 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 It shouldn't work because it should just meander on. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, you get to the end of the A, B, C, D, the D, a lot of people start applauding because they think it's over. And then you turn right around and start it all over again. And you can hear half of the audience going, oh God, you know. But in fact, the reason that works is because the material itself is just infectious. You just cannot resist it as it goes boiling along. So there are, thank you for me, there are some exceptions to the rule. And sometimes in that, we're using the word rondo just because it's the closest we can get to any form that we recognize. Mm-hmm. So obviously the thing to do is, having gone through this, let's go through a simple example of rondo. Now, this is as simple as they get. Okay, I could not come up with a simpler rondo. This is, interestingly enough, a late Mozart piano concerto. Mozart did not always become more complex with his themes as he moved on with his forms. In fact, sometimes he became simpler. So it's an interesting thing, that notion of progress, that composers move from simpler forms to more complicated ones, isn't always true. Mozart, as a matter of fact, forms tended to become clearer as he got older. Another composer of whom that is true is Beethoven. Late Beethoven's forms, his sonata forms and so on, become much more clear, much more elemental, much more down to the bone as he gets older, rather than more complicated. So notions of progress, sometimes we have to watch out. We think people write longer pieces as they get older. Well, not necessarily. Again, Beethoven's late pieces are mostly shorter than his earlier ones. So this is a very simple movement. He also must have written this for a student because it doesn't have the kind of flamboyant piano writing that's characteristic of a lot of his other stuff. So the form of the thing, I think you'll find this very interesting, the form is A, B, A, C, A, B, A, B, C, A. So there is no return to A here in the middle. There is a little coda. Okay, there is a little coda. So here we go. It's one of these animated jobbers, okay, one of these animated charts, and it'll play itself through. Parallel period by a dandy. Consequent. A regular phrase. Extension. And part three, which equals part one. I got some mail. That was the ding. I'm sorry. Now, three parts, song four. Two phrase group. Second phrase. Two half cadence. Repeats. Second phrase. Single phrase. To half cadence. Here. Part three equals part one. The two phrase group, which goes back to the tonic, repeats. Half cadence, part three. Second phrase. Transition. It's modulating to four. Middle section, single phrase. Repeats. Part two. Your friend and mine, the chain phrase. Part three. Guess what? It's going to repeat. Chain phrase. And part three. Transition. Similar tonight. And A prime, which is only part one of it. Only part one. And at that point, we enter a coda. Section one derived from B. Strong cadential 6-4, extended cadence. All right. Now, within this very simple structure, this is a very sophisticated piece. One thing to notice about it right at the end is you'll notice how that extended cadence tended to move from 1 to 4 and back again. It used a whole lot of neighboring 6-4s. Remember those guys? It did a lot of that, right? It did a lot of that. Well, the reason it was doing that is because this middle section is in four. Right? It's an E flat major. The original's in B flat. Right? So A is here and B. So in other words, this is a left-leaning piece. Do you remember what I mean by that? Pieces that tend to move to the subdominant. They tend to move to that. So he starts using motions from 1 to 4 as being almost motivic throughout. And as you listen to it and go over it, you keep finding that all over the place. Little things. And that's why here his final coda moves. Moves to 4 a lot. Another thing you will notice in here, is the use of moving to 6. B flat. It tends to. That. Again, that's a Mozart handprint. One of his earliest pieces, K2, one of those little tiny piano pieces he wrote when he was about 2 inches tall, those have that in it. It's like that's something that he kept for his whole life with that. Now, the thing about the repeat structure, I don't want to take it for granted that you see what's going on here. Typically, these have a repeat structure in which part one is treated like a single entity and it repeats itself, and then parts two and three are treated like a block and they repeat as a block. All right? So in other words, if there were repeat signs, there would be repeat signs around part one and repeat signs around parts two and three together. That's a very, very typical kind of repeat structure. I just want to remind you that there are some people out there in the world who call that rounded binary. That is a three-part song form with a two-part repeat structure. And that's not, I don't recommend the use of that term. I think it's a little inaccurate because I don't like judging a form based on where the repeats are. I don't think that's wise. But at the same time, you'll find a lot of people use that. I'd like to go over this again now, get a chance to listen to it one more time and go through it so that you can be clear on everything that's going on with it. It's pretty simple, but it's not that simple. Yes,
Gloria. So this is not a second rondo form.
This is second rondo. This is.
Even though they missed
the. That's right. It's still rondo, though. Yeah.
What's the main difference between first and second?
First rondo, remember, is just ABA. That's the big thing. And first, also remember, first rondo is a kind of a slow movement form. Is, you know, it's like a seamless whole. That's the big difference. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Listen to the parallel period. Here we go to the half cadence. Here. Consequent. Going to authentic cadence. Two. Extension. And back to part three, which is identical to part one. Part, so it goes directly into B. Notice all the four ears. There's a lot of sense of subdominant in this. To a half cadence. To a half. Second phrase, to a half cadence. Part two, single phrase, chain phrase. To half cadence, part three. First phrase identical. Second phrase stays in the tonic. It goes to an AC instead of an HC. Repeat structure. Half cadence, part three. Different because it stays in the tonic. And transition, moving to E flat. Three-part song form, single phrase. It's a modulating phrase. Part two, chain phrase. Part three. Just like part one, but it stays in the tonic. Repeat structure. And part three. Transition. It's pretty loose. And then we only have one part of A. That's all of A we do, and then coda. Notice all the subdominant. Moving to the cadential 6-4 and extended cadence. 4-1. 5-1. So you'll notice how he also does not bring A back all the way through, and that's really very smart because he really knew more than almost any other composer, I think, how not to wear out his welcome. You know, with his pieces, Mozart rarely is guilty of writing pieces that are too long. He's not like some other composers who you can really feel perfectly justified taking a cut. You know, does anybody ever play the Rachmaninoff Second Symphony without cuts? It's rare. Once in a while, but if you play it without any cuts, the damn thing's just too long. It really is. I mean, you're sitting there listening to it and you're thinking, man, this needs a red pencil. And it doesn't mean he's a bad composer. It's just a lot of composers, right, you know, have a tendency to wear out their welcomes a little bit. He never does. I've never heard a Mozart piece, I thought, sprawled. And so one of the things you find is that he really knew just enough was enough. He was so good at that. Very few composers had such a sense. And I think with such a tiny little structure he had, he knew better than to repeat all of A. But he brought a little bit of B back into his coda, so it all gives it a sense of that. Okay, do you have any questions about how this piece is put together? It's on the website, you know, this thing here, so you can play it any old time you want.
Yes.
It's a, well, that's quite all right. It's an old question, folks. Yeah. So she's going to speak Etruscan. It's going to be so old, yes. No.
I could understand the two phrase group, but mm-hmm. when I listen, it mm-hmm. seems like just a period.
It sounds like a period. It really does. But remember that the second phrase itself wasn't really finishing off the first. I'm sorry, I'm a frog in my throat. But it almost does. And remember that the distinction between a phrase, sometimes a two-phrase group and a period can be kind of weak. They both went to half cadences. Neither one of them finishes anything off. So that's why I called it that. I will tell you something about this, though. If the second phrase here had a first and second ending. Now, if the first ending went to half cadence, and if the second ending went to a pack, what would the structure of part one be?
Contrasting.
Almost, not quite. If this had, remember, this is eight bars, right, with two phrases. If it had a first and second ending, if first ending is the way Mozart wrote, and if second ending went to an authentic cadence, kind of like this does, what would be the form of part one? In that case, that would be a double period. Because the fact that this went, both of these go to half cadences are fine in a double period. They're supposed to. But if it's two phrases both going to half cadences and staying open-ended like that, it's probably not a good idea to call them a period. But I remember when I was going over this, when I was writing up this thing, I remember sitting there trying to decide what I was going to call that. And I remember deciding, no, it's a phrase group. I just didn't want to go quite so far as to call it a period. Yeah, so, but it's a wonderful question, bravo, because it's if it had said contrasting period, I think it would have been fine. Probably somebody would have raised their hand and said, wouldn't that really be more like a phrase group? You know? So it's one of those sort of depends on how tough you want to be with your definition of what a period is. Mm-hmm. Good question, thank you. Wasn't old at all. It's a very new question. All right. So let's go over a piece now, which is in the textbook form. This is an early Haydn sonata, and it's very, very clean cut. This is what I very call a very clear cut little rondo in the ABACA form, made up out of a whole bunch of things that repeat. It's just full of little tiny repeating things. This is built up like a bunch of little bricks. You know, it's just one little self-contained thing after another. So it makes it pretty easy to hear. Again, very, very straightforward piece. kind of flashy. Some of his early keyboard music tended to be like sort of surprisingly sort of, not really virtuoso, but I would say flashy. You know, a lot more interesting than a lot of the other music of the 1750s, which is when this would have been written. Mm-hmm. Here we go. It's not my imagination. It's only right channel, isn't it? I got to call Alton about that. Okay. Part two, repeat it. Okay. Now, minor. Contrasting period. Repeat it. Part two. Extension. Modulation. Part three. Mm-hmm. Part two, it's that same repeat structure, right? Modulates. And now going back to A, it's figurated. Repeats. And to C. Oh, sorry. It's a part two. Repeats. It's part two, right? Now, C. In five. Irregular phrase length, right? Da 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 ba ba ba. Three, four. Part two. Two, three, four. One, two, one, two, one, two. One, two, one, two, three, four, one. Repeat. New figurations. Repeated. That's part one, repeated, right? Part two. Part two, repeated. And A3, part one, an octave. Repeats. Coda. And then one measure at the end extra. These pieces are fun, by the way. They're a lot of fun to play. You really have to kind of loosen your inhibitions and just kind of get in there and mix it up. I discovered a mistake in here while we were listening. Did anybody find it as well? I made a goof. I do once in a while. Oh no! I didn't make a mistake in the performance. I haven't recorded this one yet. It's in this year's group. But the that's John McCabe actually. It's a pretty good performance.
Part one, you didn't separate it out.
Well, that was deliberate. I didn't have enough room on the slide. That's the only reason I did that. No, there's actually a mistake in it. Anyone mind it while we were listening? I was shocked. I was going through thinking, oh my god. It's right here. The two phrase group. It's 3+4, not 2+4. Oh shame. Shame, shame. Da 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 dum. Da 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 dum. Da 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 dum. Da 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 da. It's seven, so I've only I've left a bar unaccounted for. It's even on the internet. It's all right. Let it be. Maybe some wise person will, from wherever, they figure out what our password is, and they will get in there and they will go through my video and they'll write me and say, "Did you know?" So I'll be very impressed. There was actually my harmony lectures that are online, all of those. There was a woman at a college that began using them in her class, and she was great because she started finding little tiny mistakes, just little things, and she started mailing them to me so I could fix them. I was just really grateful. But every week I'd get a little mailing of little goofs, but she was actually using those for her class textbook, which, of course, fine with me, I sent her a bill. No, I'm kidding. But, so let's do it again, shall we? Isn't this piece cute? He wrote a lot of cute music when he was, yeah. You can see why the second richest man in Eastern Europe, Prince Esterhazy, who were second in wealth only to the Habsburgs, who were the reigning family, would pick him as his Kapellmeister. When he was 30 years old, he got a job as the vice Kapellmeister to the Esterhazy family. That's like being appointed the house composer to the Windsors or something like that. And so this really fine job he had by the age of 30, not bad. So, okay. Repeats. Part two. Repeat. Two, three, four. One, two, three, 4, B. Suddenly move into minor. He likes to do that. Contrasting period. 3, 4. 1, antecedent. 3, 4. Consequent. Part 2. 2 measures. Modulates. Equals part 1. Part 2. Modulates. Part 3. Hey, now remember it's a two-part song form. I didn't put all that down. So let's repeat a part 1. Part 2. Repeat a part 2. And into C, which is the dominant. One, two, three. One, two, three, four. Ha! Two bars and part 3. Two. Prime with part 1 repeats part 1. Part 2 repeats. And part 1 in octaves repeats. Part 1. And coda. Repeats, sort of. The only difference in 117 versus 109 is that extra one bar. And that was enough to that was enough for me to put it in as a separate thing. So okay, so that's a really good example of both of these were very simple rondos, very very simple kinds of things. What we're going to be doing now with this information, having gotten that much info, is we're going to put it to some use, of course, and study some rondos together. Now we only have a few minutes left. So I'm going to pass these out anyway, so that you have them in your hot little hands. And can start thinking about them, because we're going to look at these pieces on Wednesday together. Okay, so we're going to start. The first one is a Beethoven piano sonata. Its last movement. It's Opus 2, number 2 in A major. And I'm not sure if you're aware. There's a website called Sheet Music Archive that has quite a lot of free scores on it. Public domain stuff and so on. It's so popular that they've had to limit individuals to 2 downloads a day. Sheet Music Archive. Just do a Google for it. But it's a great source. I decided to get this from that because it then we don't have those crazy measure numbers from my Schenker edition to deal with. So, oh, I'm sorry. I use this. So we'll be working with this, and then we're also that incredibly chipper piece that I played for you, started playing as my sound test at the beginning of class. That's the great B-flat Mozart Serenade, the great big one. And do you remember in the movie Amadeus, the first time Salieri meets Mozart, that scene? This is what they're playing. Okay, yeah. And so, and this last movement is what he you know, it's that finish. So it's a good piece. What I would suggest you do with these guys, with these puppies, is just to go through them a little bit, if you want to, on your own. just for your for your own moxie. Welcome back, Jeff. for your own stuff, let me just give you a little sense of the Beethoven in the few minutes we have left. Okay, here's a little bit of it. It's Richard Good, by the way, playing. It's our return to A, isn't it? Haydn student. Yeah. Stop for that. Every time that A comes back, that opening flourish gets a little wilder. It's like the plant grows a little bigger each time, you know. But he plays it. What I would suggest that you do is take a look through it. We'll go through it together as a class project, that and this Mozart on Wednesday. But take a look through it on your own so you can get some ideas about structures and so on. Okay. Don't forget that next week you have an assignment due on first rondo, and. And remember, that's on the website. There's nothing, you know, there's no handout. All right. Be well. Be happy. Be productive. Be fruitful. And I will see you Wednesday.